Hey, Steven.
Hey, Debbie. How you doing?
I'm fine. How are you?
I am feeling good. We are actually probably about a week away from finishing season two, Cross. We're here to talk about season one, so let's jump in it.
Well, I can't wait for season two, I'll tell you that much. I wanted season two as soon as season one ended. So,
ready? I think we all did. I mean, obviously, you know, we got a season two pickup before season one ever aired. So, you know, we were feeling pretty good in terms of what we did with season one. But, you know, the type of response that it got ultimately, you know, I mean, you hope for it, but it's even better when it happens.
Yeah. I binged the whole season back in November because they were trying to set me up with Nzinga. And after seven failed attempts, because she was always working on something, the publicist said, no, forget about it. But then when we come back around now for Emmy season, so I have not only binged the whole series a second time, I have binged it a third time now.
Know it better than I do now. My problem is I'm so obsessed with season two, like literally, you know, that's I think where my brain is. But you can refresh my memory, so go for it.
Well, you edited three very key episodes. You did five, which was what happened at Ramsay's, that incredible birthday bash that Ed Ramsay threw for himself. Then you did episode six right after that, a bang, not a whimper. And then the final, you had me at motherfucker. Well, and I've talked with cinematographer with Brendan about five and six. And I have to say, five is such a tonal shift in the series.
Right.
That is a really critical episode.
That was the one Ben was most nervous about. I mean, I was excited that I was going to be able to do it, but it definitely made him nervous. You know, but when I say Ben Watkins,
yeah,
the creator of the show. So let's jump into that one, because that's, like I said, ultimately, you know, that was one that, you know, I think, like, knowing that we had Ramsay and Cross, knowing that we had that conversation, we knew it was both. You know what I mean? The question was, in a lot of ways, it was like a bottleneck episode, right? And
mm-hmm.
You know, and sometimes those can feel like, you know what I mean? They do it more for budget reasons, right, than anything else. But, you know, but it wasn't done for budget reasons. It was just, you know, it was a perfect situation to get these two people together. You know, you had obviously what was going on in the basement stuff. You had a little bit of a beast, you know, you had the beast story with sending, you know, Samson to Indiana to confront Ramsay's mom. But otherwise, you're in a house, you know, with the two of them and the tension of all of it, you know.
And that building, that tension, falls on you in the editing bay.
It does.
That episode is, you've got, first, Brendan gives you some great footage to work with. A lot of overhead shots, almost voyeuristic, like a fly on the wall. And things warm up a little bit. But it's the tone, because of the basement stuff and the tension that is building, it really, this shifts the entire series. So I'm curious for you, coming into this, you've got four episodes that have set the stage behind this. And now things are starting to get turned on their head. How do you approach this, working with Stacey Muhammad as the director of this episode? How do you then come in and work with this footage, knowing what came before, and how this upsets the apple cart?
Sure. So if you think about it, right, because I came on last, meaning we've locked shot up the entire season. So we had an editor, Roz, was doing the first two. Jorge did episodes three and four. Then I came in on five and six. So, you know, obviously I've read all the scripts.
Mm-hmm.
By the time I showed up, you know, probably one and two were sort of in a, you know, in a decent, you know, a decent shape to at least kind of get a general idea and feels of everything. You know, I think Jorge was still probably in the midst of, like, an editor's or maybe a director's cut. So I did get a chance to just kind of watch everything to sort of just get a general vibe of the characters themselves, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, and I'm forgetting the actor who plays Ramsey, you know, it's so good.
Ryan Eggold.
You know what I mean? Like, one of those where you're just like, oh, my God, thank God, you know, because, you know, him and Elvis together is just going to be fantastic. So, you know, we knew performance-wise we were in a safe place. It was just, you know, it was just the elements of being able to kind of set that mood, right? And you start it right off the top in terms of the party, preparing for the party, the music that was scripted, right? So
mm-hmm.
that was in the script. We had the chorus of the young singers, you know, the stuffing the pig, you know, Ramsey sort of getting ready. You know, I mean, like, it was just one of those things where you felt like, oh, this is a culmination, you know, of everything that we're kind of leading to. How is this going to play out? You know, ultimately, when we get to the end, I don't know if we're supposed to reveal things or not, but to see how it all falls apart for Cross in a way, like, you know, you feel like, oh, we've got him. How is Ramsey getting out of this? And, you know, and ultimately he does. It was, you know, like I said, it was one of those, with the footage that I had, it was a lot of fun sort of putting it together. I mean, when you talk about the DP, I think it's, you know, to not talk about the production design too. There's something about, like, when I would watch dailies and just look at the frames in terms of, like, the masters, you know, I feel like anytime I freeze frame something and I looked at an image, it was just beautiful. You know what I mean? Like, there was the detail in all the scenes always felt like we're working, you know, we're elevating the material in a way that, you know, like I said, they're the subtle things that, you know, I mean, as an audience member, maybe, you know, you're not picking it up, but there's, you know, the production design can set the mood for things. I think it's just one of those elements that ultimately that gets me sort of excited, where I feel like, you know, there's other things going on than just the dialogue and the performances.
Yeah, the production design, especially in this episode, in the initial opening episodes, production design is very important to fill us in on who Alex Cross is, what his family is, sets that whole tone. But here, this really dives into who Ed Ramsey is. And
yes.
Curtain is being pulled back. And Elisa Suave's, her production design is outstanding. Outstanding.
Absolutely.
Which then lets Brendan use all those corners and those narrow hallways for confrontations and face-offs.
Yeah.
Which you then it goes into your hands, and you've got so much to work with there to build.
I do. So, you know, obviously having a relationship with Ben, sort of a long-term relationship with him, I know what Ben likes, you know what I mean? He loves masters. He's not afraid to sort of stay with them. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, we're in television, more in the streaming world, so I think we get away with, you know, more than we would probably on network. And, you know, you always just, you want to service the story, but, you know, you kind of say, okay, whose point of view is it, and how long can I stay in a shot before I have to start going to close-ups and feel like, you know,
mm-hmm.
I need to get a little bit more intimate. So, you know, anytime that we could just sort of be able to let things sort of play and breathe and not feel like, oh, let's cut, to me that, you know, that can also sort of add to the tension of the scene. Is you know, throwing it off just a little bit and not feel like you're in your sort of typical cutting patterns, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's the stuff that always excites me when you're looking at
I love how you built the tension there. I love how you went back and forth, and we get a look into the basement. We really, as I said, the curtain gets pulled back, and the way that you take us back and forth as to what's going on and how people are clueless and they just think Ed Ramsey is the greatest guy on the planet, better than sliced bread. But then we're finally getting to see exactly what he's really doing.
Like I said, with a performance that's so nuanced, too, in so many ways, because, you know, obviously, you can go big, and you can go, you know, there's ways of, you know, we've all seen those type of characters,
but mm-hmm.
ultimately, you know, with an actor like him, like I said, it's just, you just felt like, oh, you know, he's having fun, but there's a lot at stake, and you know, just when you think you've got him, you know, he's got a trick up his sleeve.
If the Academy members do not give an Emmy nomination to Ryan Eggold for that performance as Ramsey, none of them should be in the Academy voting. Because
I always say those things too. You know, you sort of wonder, you know, but you know how that world is. None of that stuff ever necessarily makes sense. But
yeah,
I think we feel good.
But his performance is just—it is beyond creepy. Beyond creepy. Yeah. And the blonde hair on him, because we're not used to seeing Ryan with blonde hair.
What's funny is my mom, who was a fan of his, was it that New Amsterdam show that
uh-huh.
used to watch, she didn't even realize it was him until I kind of, you know, explained it, you know, and once she saw it, she, you know what I mean, it just blew her mind, you know.
But episode 5 really is what sent me over the edge with what we're getting in terms of pacing and tone. And then that takes us into episode 6, A Bang Not a Whimper, and we're on the road. Alex is on the road, heading to Philly with his son.
Just the family stuff, obviously, you know, there's a family dynamic to the show.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fine balance in terms of, you know, especially that late in the season,
yeah.
once we kind of, you know, when all the stakes have been raised, how do you sort of pull this off, you know, with the balance, you know, between the two. So that one was definitely, that was, a lot of that stuff was discussed and thought about as the episode was sort of put together. But emotionally, the payoff, you know, with Cross and the son, inside, you know, the house, when they're talking about the mom.
Yep.
You know, I mean, those are those character moments where it's like, you know, I don't care what's going on story-wise, from a human side, if those scenes aren't hitting you, then, you know, then this show isn't for you. And,
yeah.
And that's, you know, that was definitely important.
Pace and the tone of episode 6, after what we get in episode 5, you actually give us a little bit of breathing room and remind us that Alex Cross, at his heart, is a family man. And that everything that's been happening is really driven by the murder of his wife that we saw in the opening episode. But this then, by reminding us of the family, the familial importance, it sets us up for you to come back in episode 8. You had me a motherfucker and just blow us out of the water.
Well, like I said, obviously knowing where we were going, ultimately with episode 8, we needed to keep, right? We needed to keep the kids alive.
Yeah.
You felt like you owed, you know, the resolve in terms of what was going on with the son, to really sort of set up that dynamic for the ending. But if you want to talk a little bit about stuff or 6.
Mm-hmm.
A great example is the end of episode 6, right? Which is Samson and Kayla confronting Ramsey at his house about, because, you know, they're waiting for the call to pick him up and bring him in.
Yep.
Because they've got their witness now, right? And originally, those two scenes at the end of the episode, those were two separate scenes, right? On the longer side, especially the B side, That was one of those, after I put it together, I realized this isn't working, you know, because you sense something was coming because Ramsey says, you know, so you got a witness, you sure about that? And he's kind of got that smile where you realize, oh, shit, you know, something's about to happen. And then you sort of cut to the scene with the witness, and it played long. It went on for, you know, you were kind of like, you knew something was going to happen. Why aren't we getting to it a little bit faster? So that's where the idea of the cross-cutting those scenes came up.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, let's set up a cross-cut between both of these scenes. So by the time Ramsey says, you sure you've got a witness, and you've got that look on their face like, you know, they get nervous. The next time we see, it's when the gun's coming out and, you know, the guy is killed.
Mm-hmm.
And then the reveal of the cop being in on it, and you realize how far-reaching, you know, Ramsey really is.
Mm-hmm.
That was, like I said, I kind of said, as much as I, as you know, five is probably like my favorite. Six, that sequence in six was probably my favorite because I felt like, you know, I mean, it was one of those, it wasn't cross-cut, it wasn't talked about it, and, you know, those are those moments where I always say, you know, it doesn't matter what the script says, I always feel like the footage will tell me what it wants to do.
Mm-hmm.
And in that moment there, it wanted to be cross-cut, you know, and when I told Stacy, like, hey, I want to show you something, you know, you know, you can tell me if you hate it, you know, but she loved it, and so it worked out great.
Yeah, I think your intuition served you extremely well in that sequence, because had it not been cross-cut, the tension would not have escalated the way it did.
Not at all. And that's the thing. It was always like, how do we keep this tension up? How do we keep, you know, how do you keep the tension up? And that's the thing, like, when you read it, you know, when you read it on the page, because on the page it works, right? It's just one of those, you realize, oh, okay, now you've kind of got a rhythm going, and you're going, yeah, this rhythm just isn't right. I always say, like, you know, when I'm editing, it's for me, it's always just about the rhythm and the pacing of, you know, of what my sense feels like it needs to be. And, you know, I feel like if I stick with that, I'm usually never, you know, I usually will get what I need from a scene.
Well, I can honestly tell you, with all of the episodics that you have done that I have seen, your intuition has served you quite well.
Thanks. You know, obviously, I'd like to kind of mix between the different, you know, genres,
yep,
especially between that, you know, the half hours and hours and everything. That's, you know, that's always tough in my world because, you know, everyone loves to sort of pigeonhole you. Oh, you're a 1 hour guy. Or you're a half hour guy. So that was one of those things that I really fought hard to be able to kind of, you know, mix between the two and say, no, you know, I can cut anything, you know, I can cut anything you put in front of me.
When you can cut Turner and Hooch, the Kaminsky method, and okay, even going back to your early stuff with the closer in the practice.
Right.
Yeah, you can
the
cut everything.
Period, that's all I would get. Well, you know, I'd get calls for lawyer shows and cop shows. That was it. You know, and it was, I realized, oh shit, I gotta make a conscious effort to just start saying no to these and try and start, you know, branching off and doing it and doing other things. But I will say this, that David Kelly world,
mm-hmm,
that was basically my film school because, you know, the what I was able to sort of do in the, you know, I think it was there 5-6 years in terms of post-production. I think I literally held every position in post, you know, from assisting to actually running post and also editing too. And that really was like, oh wow, you know, it kind of opened my eyes to that world in a good way. But ultimately, when I left that, I realized, yeah, the editing room is kind of the only thing I want to do. I like the creative aspect as compared to when you sort of run post, it's more like babysitting, you know.
Yeah.
You're involved in everything, but, you know, I mean, it's...
But you're not involved.
Get my hands dirty.
You want to get your hands dirty. But that training ground, it makes me wonder how important, learning all of that about post, how does the sound design and scoring impact your editing? Or especially with Cross, with these episodes in Cross, or yeah, so, does that come in after the fact for you?
No, I mean, here's the thing. Obviously, you know, I've been doing it long enough in a way that, like, you know, the movies I sort of grew up on. Like, I'm obsessed when it comes to the sound side of it and the music side. So for me, you know, things are, you know, there's the script, there's the actors, you know, things are working best when all of those elements are working together.
Mm-hmm.
So I know, like, oh, you know, for a Cross vision, we're going to be in a sound design element along with, you know, the musical sort of element. And, you know, shout out to our composers on Cross. Adrian and Ali, they really, you know, those are two guys that definitely come, you know, from a different world in terms of how they, you know, the way they sort of score, but work so well in our world to give it that sort of unique feel.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, getting a piece of music from them and knowing, oh, you know, I'm not going to use a piece of music here, but I know exactly where to use a piece like this, you know, because it's got that sort of almost jazz feel to it at mm-hmm. times. And, you know, it's, you know, that, you know, the sound aspect especially, you know, that stuff always excites me when I know, like, oh, we're going to elevate this sequence even more than you would have thought, because, you know, we've got more than just the actors right now. We've got more than just the dialogue. We're going to hit you with some sound, you know, a soundscape that's going to sort of take it to the next level along with this cue. And then we're going to, you know, we're going to drop out all of that, you know, and then we're going to hit you. You know what I mean? Like, there's, you know, there's so many ways to kind of manipulate ultimately.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the exciting, you know, exciting parts when you're sort of playing with scenes. You know, like an example would be when Cross is, you know, even like little moments when Cross is talking with the son in episode 6 about the mom, the way, you know, when he's playing back the voicemail stuff,
uh-huh.
you know, that, you know what I mean? And all of a sudden we go more into sort of a reverb world and we're kind of in Cross's head for a little bit where he sort of gets worked up and emotional. Just minor touches, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But really, you know, it's already a powerful scene, but it's just, you know, just kind of gives it that little extra element.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought up the score, because there are the jazzy moments, and that is the notes of jazz. They're unstructured. It's freeform, very much the way Alex Cross, and he plays jazz on the piano at home, and his son plays.
Absolutely.
And that really serves, it's so metaphoric for unraveling all the pieces of this puzzle of Ed Ramsey that is unfolding. Very freeform and unpredictable. So it works so well, and it flows. Your editing flows with that. It flows with your editing. So I really, really appreciate that. And then, of course, you bring it. You get a rest with episode 7. You get to rest.
Which, by the way, episode 7 was the one I think I was most jealous of. There was something about that episode where I was like, damn, I wish I cut that one. You know, the surprise reveal in that one, I thought just, you know, worked so well. Just when you thought we were done with Ramsey, it's like, no, he's never, never going to be done with
him. We're never done with Ed Ramsey. But then we get into 8, and 8 brings everything back home. It bookends perfectly with episode 1 in terms of family. It all comes right down to family. Cross's family, his mother, his kids, and of course his family with his fellow officers, the ones that are not corrupt and have disappeared. But you get this incredible, that cabin sequence. I was on the edge of my chair, Stephen. The edge of my chair. And that's a very difficult number one, they're working with kids there. And that always adds another element. Now, was the fire actually fire, or was that visual effects? Because then that's another layer for you to have to work with.
Yep. All of that stuff was visual effects. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, obviously, you know, the hardest part with that stuff is always the silliness of it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Of pantomiming and, you know, kind of playing how it's going to be, you know, and then obviously you're adding all the sort of fire elements to it. I believe we got a chance to do some tweaks based on some early rough, you know, versions that we were getting back going, okay, we don't need to hang in this shot for this long, you know what I mean? This shot's going to be more effective if we cut it a little bit faster. So there was a little bit of room to play, but yes, all of that stuff was done after the fact. Even the burnt out, you know, after it all sort of plays out the next morning, fire trucks in front, all the building stuff, the cabin stuff burnt out, that's all CGI visual effects.
Wow.
Yeah, they did a really good job.
I never would have suspected that. Never would have suspected that.
All of that.
Because it looks absolutely fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. But now, in that, because everything, it's the culmination in episode 8, what was the biggest challenge in bringing it all home in episode 8?
Well, I don't know if it was a challenge. I guess it was making sure that, like, we sort of earned, you know, we earned everything. I mean, Obviously, the audience is smart, right? Mm-hmm. You know, after episode 7, you're kind of, you know there is an episode 8, right? So you feel like, well, you know, didn't it wrap up? You know, like, you know, what else is, I mean, we have the Maria storyline, and, you know, and the thing about Cross is, you know, Ben, you know, I think the game plan is, for the most part, is, you know, each season, you know, we wrap up the season. You know what I mean? Things mm-hmm. don't necessarily, they're not lingering for more than one. So, mm-hmm. we the resolve was there. It was making sure we sort of earned all that moments. And do we still have this one more trick up our sleeve? Is the audience, you know, is the audience ahead of us in terms of who Alex is? You know, potential Alex's wife's potential killer is. You know, so that was probably that fine line of how much you know can we reveal in terms of that early part
mm-hmm.
until Alex makes the discovery itself. I mean, yes, we're in the cabin, you know, and you assume things are going to sort of play out, but you know that surprise element of when Alex sort of figures it out and then has that confrontation, you know, over the phone, and, you know, and now you realize once again, you know what I mean, he's behind, and how is he going to sort of pull this out, and like I said, ultimately, you know, that's what I loved about the coming full circle, especially with John, his partner, storyline, mm-hmm. because, you know, once he sort of apologizes and talks about the family aspect of it, you know what I mean? You're like locked and loaded, and you're ready to, you know, you're ready to see how these two are gonna pull it off together.
Well, and I have to say, it's the apology scene that is cut so well. It's shot so well. It's cut so well. Because it's not like, hey, man, I'm sorry. It wasn't, it was just to the point. He's at the door, and it's like, yeah, you know, okay, bro, we're off, you know? No mushy-gushies.
That, you know, like I said, the dismissive nature of just, you know, ultimately what Samson comes, like I said, it's heartfelt, emotional, but then I also just, you know, how do you not chuckle at, you know, at the line.
Yeah, through, I mean,
just in terms of the way he delivered. I mean, the dynamic between those two actors,
wonderful.
You know, it really is. It's what I mean? Like, he's, you know, he himself is such a strong character. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, he could easily have his own show. You know what I mean? Like, I'd watch that guy do anything.
And, oh, my God, yeah.
There's a presence about him, but, you know, but, and that's not to take anything away from Elvis, because, you know, there's a cool factor to Elvis in almost any scene that he's in that just, you know, you can't help but lean in whenever, you know, he sort of goes up. Within a scene, and the way he sort of drives scenes is always, you know, he said there's, you know, he's one of those actors that, you know, just naturally just gifted. You can just, you see it in all of his work.
Oh, absolutely. That chemistry between Aldous and Isaiah, between Cross and Samson, it's fantastic. Yeah. But that apology scene, it was such a guy scene, you know? You're not going to see.
It was a guy scene. That scene was just technical because obviously we had the rain element, you know, which was, you know, we had the rain element playing, and there was concern that the audio was not, you know, wasn't usable.
Oh.
But it was one of those things where, like, sorry, guys, you're going to have to make it work because I don't feel comfortable asking Elvis to loop a moment like this. Like,
yeah.
This is, you know, I mean, he can do it, but it's like, we want that raw emotional mm-hmm. in the moment, not, you know, not looped stuff after. I think we might have looped it just to protect ourselves, worst case scenario, but ultimately when we got to the mix stage, the guys did a really good job in terms of being able to make his original performance work, because, you know, that's where we want it to be.
And in a scene like that, I'm glad that, you know, you stuck to your guns there. And it's like, no, we got to go with this. And the rain, even though it affects the production sound, it adds so much to a moment like that, because it kind of covers the guy embarrassment of, you know, yeah, I'm apologizing, but I'm not really going to say the words. And the rain kind of helps, it helps cover up that guy emotion, that male emotion.
Absolutely.
So I thought, I loved it.
That's music to the scene, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Now, you had a different director for episode 8. Carl Seton was directing. Does a different director, especially in a series like this, does it impact your work in the editing bay with them? Because you were Stacy for 2 episodes, you had a break, and then, disappointingly, you had a break. Because you wanted episode 7. And then episode 8, you've got Carl as the director and a different DP. Maya is the DP on that. Does this affect how you're going to edit that episode?
You know, it really doesn't. I mean, obviously, you know, both DP and Carl, you know, I mean, they're getting dailies. At that point, Carl has definitely been giving some rough episodes to get a general idea of things, so he's already going into it with a good mindset of what's sort of working, you know, and, you know, in terms of what Ben is looking for, because, you know, he'll tone the episodes with the directors and basically go scene by scene, you know, give the director a chance to ask questions and he'll let them know what he's looking for. So I'll be in on those tone meetings and be able to kind of hear those conversations, so I have a good idea too of what Ben's looking for and hoping for. Now, you know, that doesn't mean that's what's going to show up footage wise,
because, mm-hmm.
you know what I mean, that's the nature of how things ultimately play out. But, you know, in a lot of ways, there's always what I call those happy accidents within the scenes, So, you know, Carl himself had a good understanding, and from the footage that I was getting, I didn't feel like, oh my God, I think we're in another world. Like, no, it felt right for everything that we were doing. Now, obviously, you know, there's individual likes and dislikes in terms of, you know, persona of what, you know, one director might like in terms of performances or shots, you know. Certain shots, so, you know, we probably had more conversations about that type of stuff, and really it was just fine, because, you know, obviously that one one might have been our longest episode. You know, it's a finale, so, you know, I think we're giving a little bit more leeway in terms of length. It's, in the streaming world, obviously, time is not as important as the network world.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of what I always say, just because we have the time, it doesn't mean it justifies, like, you know, the episodes, you know, running long in a way that, you know, there's still a pace and a rhythm to the entire season that you feel like you want to honor. But, you know, so I think our biggest challenge there was just really getting time out of the episode, but not feeling like we're shortchanging it.
Mm-hmm. How much time do you get? How early do you get footage for these episodes so that you can start cutting?
So it's a real-time thing, meaning they shoot it on a Monday. I get the footage on a Tuesday, right?
Okay.
And that's the reason why you have more than one editor, is because,
sure,
think about it, we never stop shooting once we start shooting. So I believe this was, you know, I mean, the finale was probably a few more days, but in general, I think there were 10 episodes. The finale, we might have gotten like 12 days or something like that. So I try and stay up to camera. I can't always, you know, keep that promise, but for the most part, I do. And then what happens is I have probably like 4 days after my last day of dailies to present the director with what I call my editor's cut.
Mm-hmm.
But my editor's cut has all the bells and whistles. Like, as I always say, you know, as far as I'm concerned, it's a lock cut. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
If you want to make changes, you're allowed to. But, you know, this is what I would air today if you left it up to me. You know, and that's, you know, it's all temp music, it's all temp sound, but it's fully realized in a way that I feel comfortable in. Ultimately, all that stuff gets, you know, cleaned up, switched out. New music is written specifically, you know, for scenes and stuff. But,
mm-hmm.
It's whatever the shooting schedule is, and then you probably added another 4 days for my editor's cut. And then I believe, you know, the director gets, you know, got like 4 or 5 days on his cut. And then, you know, and then it's me working with Ben and the producers. You know, then we go to the network, then we go to the studio. we go a few rounds with that, back and forth with that.
Because there are so many characters in a series like Cross, you know, it's not like some of the episodics that you have done where you don't have an overlap of the character actors who come in and out. Here, it's like a character like Miss Nancy, which, oh my God, that woman scared the crap out of me the minute she showed up on screen. And by the time we get to episode 8, wow.
Yeah. Once we discover what the situation is, especially in the cabin there, Carl did that shot on a close-up on her face. And it was like, oh my God. It was one of those angles where you're like, it's such a perfect shot at this particular moment that just kind of told us everything, you know? And I remember when I saw that, it just, you know what I mean, I just laughed in a good way of just like, oh, okay, Carl knows exactly what he's doing, you know? So those, like I said, there's always certain moments where you realize, yeah, he's got a great handle of what this episode can be.
Are there any moments, especially in this series, in the episodes you cut, are there any moments where you see, where the camera has captured someone in the background who's not just an extra, but who is a peripheral character to the storyline? Has it happened where you notice something and think, okay, maybe we should include this, push it in, hold this a little longer?
Yeah, and it's interesting because, I mean, obviously, I feel like I will play with sizes a lot, meaning
mm-hmm.
I will do repositions of things. Depending on how intimate I want things to sort of play, or, you know, sometimes I would say it's actually the opposite. Something might be distracting that's going on beyond in the frame.
Mm-hmm.
You want to try and minimize something like that because, like I said, I want the focus, you know, as the editor, I always feel like I want to drive the focus and where the eye is. So it's like, I know if I do a little reposition here, and mind. Mm-hmm. Now you're more focused on a performance or on a moment than you would be if it's, you know, a little bit wider, a little off center left, because there's a monitor in the police precinct that's kind of, you know, there's something going on that just kind of draws your eye's attention.
Yeah.
You just don't want to distract in the moment. So those are probably the time I would say when I'm playing around with that, where I just want to make sure my focus is I'm directing where I want the focus to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm one of those people that I'm always perusing the background, the periphery.
You know, it's funny. Sometimes it will take me a while to, you know, and I'll be cutting it, you know, to all of a sudden, like, I'm, you know, all of a sudden I get obsessed with, like, yeah, a background actor or something in a way that you're just like, oh, wait, what is that guy doing there? Like, I didn't even notice it, and meanwhile, I've watched this thing, like, 100 times, you know? That's my biggest problem when it comes to continuity, you know? is no one ever notices continuity until they've watched it about, you know, probably, you know, 4 or 5 times. And that's where I always got to argue with producers, you know, did you catch that on the first viewing? Did you catch that on the second viewing? Because by the time we get to the fifth viewing, you're not even looking at the screen. Like, you're looking at everything but what's going on in the scene, mm-hmm. because you know the scene all too well. So if you're not dinging me on continuity on the first viewing, or maybe the second viewing, then we're just moving on. Because I always say, editing is not continuity. It's, you know what I mean?
Right.
It's rhythm and pacing is more important, yeah, for me.
Continuity should have been happening when the camera was rolling.
Of course. But, you know, and it's one of those things where, you know, it's yeah, you can get away with so much. You really can. But, you know, listen, I can watch any of my favorite movies, you know, when I watch them, you know, when I can watch them now, I can see stuff all the time that I would never have, you know, noticed when I watched it for the first time or second time. Yeah.
There are films that I have watched hundreds of times. Baz Luhrmann's Moulin Rouge is one. And
oh, God.
To this day,
forget it, right?
To this day, every time I watch, I will see something else that I hadn't noticed before.
Absolutely.
Even with something like Now Voyager, with Bette Davis and Paul Henreid, sure. I will see things. And that's another one I've seen a couple hundred times.
But when I watch those movies, yeah, the editing, you know what I mean, some of the rules that we kind of, you know, we follow, yeah, they didn't seem to be many of those type of rules back then.
Yeah. There truly didn't. But, Stephen, this has been such a joy to get to speak with you about Cross. You have done an amazing job on your episodes. Everybody has done an amazing job on this entire series.
Shout out to the, you know, the Cross editing team. You know, Roz, Jorge, Jeff, my assistant Matt, all the assistants, really. You know, it's one of those, you know, you never know what you're going to get with a group of people. Obviously, you sort of hope for the best, but, you know, like, when I came into the process, especially late, you know, going through those episodes, you know, it was one of those, like, they were already in really good shape.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was really just a simple sort of, you know, we need a little bit of time out of this one. You know, certain things are still kind of bothering Ben. Just, you know, seeing if we can sort of realize some moments a little bit more. But it was one of those, I was so kind of happy where everything was, because it actually made my life easier showing up for my episodes, because it was like, oh, I've got a really good understanding of how mm-hmm. these characters are sort of playing, you know? And it's like, you know, let's try and have fun with it all.
Well, I can't wait for season 2.
Oh, it's, like I said, bigger, location-wise, the mythology stuff is really interesting. That's all I'll reveal for now.
Ooh, well, I can't wait. And hopefully I'll get to chat with you again once season 2 comes out.
Absolutely.
Stephen, this has been an absolute joy. I have my fingers and toes crossed for Cross and all of you for Emmy nominations, because all the work in this series is truly award-worthy on every level. as I said, it's up, you know, the editing is what really helps keep you immersed in the tension and in the mystery. It's very much like the way that all of these episodes, all eight of these, have been cut. It is as if I am sitting down and reading James Patterson's books, Alex Cross books.
Wow, that's a compliment. We
You know,
will definitely take that compliment.
because to me, that's so many adaptations or inspirations from books are done poorly. And one of the big thing, I think, Thomas Harris, Silence of the Lambs, that was the first film I ever saw that really was a perfect adaptation. And everything I saw in my head and felt as I read the book, I saw unfold on screen. That is the same effect I am getting here watching Cross. It is like reading Patterson's book, any of the Cross books, and having it
That's great.
unfold, and that same tension that I can't get to the next page. I can't turn it fast enough. So, job so well done, Stephen. And thank you so much for taking time to talk with me today.
Look forward to doing it again.
So do I. And you go have a wonderful holiday weekend.